Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Therefore, one who is in full knowledge should divide his accumulated wealth in five parts: for religion, for reputation, for opulence, for sense gratification, and for the maintenance of his family members. Such a person is happy in this world and in the next. The Shastras enjoin that if one has money, one should divide all that he has accumulated into five divisions: one part for religion, one part for reputation, one part for opulence, one part for sense gratification, and one part to maintain the members of his family. At the present, however, because people are bereft of all knowledge, they spend all their money for the satisfaction of their family. Srila Rupa Goswami taught us by his own example. By using 50% of his accumulated wealth for Krishna, 25% for his own self, and 25% for the members of his family, one's main purpose should be to advance in Krishna consciousness. This will include Dharma, Artha, and Kama. However, because one's family members expect some profit, one should also satisfy them by giving them a portion of one's accumulated wealth. This is a Shastric injunction. Hare Krishna. So, yesterday, Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj gave a very nice class, very expert class, as usual, on this subject. So, now we're just continuing a little bit further into the words of Shukracharya, the great sage, and to his response to the words of Vamanadev. So it was said yesterday that it was only when Shukracharya pointed out to Bali Maharaj that the small dwarf Brahman was actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead did he begin to realize. But up to that point, Bali Maharaj, of course, he'd been somehow fascinated. Somehow deep in his heart, he knew that this little Brahmin boy was something very special, so he was paying close attention to him. But Shukracharya had his own motives, so he was also very interested that Bali Maharaj should not be swayed so easily by the words of Supreme Personality. And it's said that earlier it said that Shukracharya is Vidam Varaha, the best of the learned. And this is because Shukracharya, being a great sage, he immediately knew that Vamanadeva was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It was no surprise to him. Being a great sage, not to forget that earlier on in this whole saga, when the demons had been completely almost wiped out by the demigods, Shukracharya actually brought them back to life. So he's a mighty sage. But still, he's very much occupied with the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, you could say. They're very much involved in great wealth and prosperity and maintaining that great wealth and prosperity. So, when Shukracharya is beginning to speak about the proper way of charity and livelihood to Bali Maharaj, it's not just for Bali Maharaj's sake, but also for his own. We can gather that Shukracharya, being a great demon, but also being a Brahmin, he's being supported by Bali Maharaj's great wealth. And Bali Maharaj's great wealth goes beyond anything that we can perceive, because it includes great dweeps, great cosmic islands belong to Bali Maharaj. He's supremely wealthy. And we can see also in another aspect of Shukracharya, if you go back to there's Emperor Yayati, who is actually the progenitor of most of the Aryan population. Most of the Indo-Aryan population of the world come from this Emperor Yayati. And that story is quite interesting, because Shukracharya had a daughter, Devayani, who was very beautiful, and Emperor Yayati, who of course was very, very full of all opulence and great wealth, he fell in love with this Devayani. And Shukracharya said to him, "So you must marry my daughter Devayani." But Yayati said, "No, but I can't, because I'm a Kshatriya. And your daughter, she's the daughter of a Brahmin." So in those days, it was considered not right for a Kshatriya to marry, a Kshatriya man to marry a Brahmana woman was considered not proper, because they're worried about that the offspring might not be very perfect. They might cause problems. So he refused, but Shukracharya actually amended the law so that this marriage could go ahead. So here again, Shukracharya, you can see he's like, he's manipulating the situation to get the full benefit, because obviously he wanted to benefit from all the extraordinary wealth of Emperor Yayati as well. And one interesting thing about this is that even though that wedding went ahead and children came, actually from the eldest son of Devayani came the whole Kuru dynasty, including Krishna himself. So you can see everything is by Krishna's arrangement, but still you can see that Shukracharya, he was more interested in wealth, this kind of greed for wealth, than anything else. So obviously this great need for sense gratification, it doesn't stop. It doesn't matter if you've got like a couple of £1,000 in the bank, you might think you're wealthy and you can survive in the society. Or you can go to the level of Bali Maharaj and Shukracharya and this family who are just wealthy beyond compute. But still they'll seek more. There's this greed to seek more and more. So Srila Prabhupada said, people must be taught how to be satisfied with only what they need. Modern civilization, there's no real education. Everybody's just trying to possess more and more and more, and everybody's dissatisfied and unhappy. So even in the purport here, Srila Prabhupada just echoes what Shukracharya said. Yes, it's true that the Shastras enjoin that if one has money, you should divide it into different divisions, and you should be careful what you do with it. But at the same time, then he goes on to say, but at the present, in the Kali Yuga, people are bereft of all such knowledge. Nobody is following the Shastric way of life, the Vedic way of life. Or perhaps some are, but very few. And it's decreasing all the time. Most are just after sense gratification. But still, Srila Prabhupada says, but you still need to maintain your family. You need to look after your family. It's very important. But of course, the essence of all charity is to give to Krishna. So greed has its way of working in the world. And we can see it tends to fall often on just certain individuals or races or communities to the detriment of everybody else. So some people get very wealthy and some people suffer the consequences. You only have to look at the world today, just because of the terms of trade that were set up between the Western world and Asia and Africa. They still exist, and that's why we have third world, fourth world nations and people suffering due to those terms of trade that were set up by the greedy colonialists. And it still goes on today. It's like it doesn't have to happen. You know, there's so much abundance in the world. It's like Krishna has given everything we need. On every tree, on every fruit tree, each fruit contains many, many seeds. And within each of these seeds is another fruit tree just waiting to grow. So there's unlimited abundance and it's all available. It's only we, the conditioned souls, who mess it all up because of greed, because of lust. This is the result. But still, it's a playground for us, and Krishna is somehow separate from all of this. So we need to get on to it. But we can see it is painful, and it doesn't help us progress in life. It doesn't help us reach the proper conclusion. We have a world full of huge business conglomerates that are so vast they don't even know. They don't communicate properly within themselves, and they cause great harm. So examples in recent times of in Bhopal in India, what was that, 1984? Huge disaster, and like some big American company, which we won't name, they had the Indian government had their share, so they built the factory there, the huge gas factory. And due to, you know, cutting costs or not enough money coming in to sustain the Indian factory, eventually there was a huge explosion. You know, this huge range of, people say different amounts of people were killed, but it was a huge number of people were initially killed, and people still suffer because the groundwater has become completely contaminated. And immediately, of course, the Americans disappeared out of India. They tried to arrest them, but they couldn't do it. So this is the kind of thing, this one example of what's happening in the world due to greed. So greed just wipes out any compassion that one might have. You know, this is a problem. Intensive farming projects, if slaughterhouses were not bad enough, intensive farming is horrendous, and so many creatures are being killed every day to satisfy the palate of the humans. Very disturbing. But not to forget, to put it into perspective, that we are actually in Kali Yuga. This is Kali's age. So when Maharaj Parikshit, he was walking the earth, looking over his domain and taking control of it. And of course, his domain certainly included this whole planet. So he was walking around, and one day he saw a terrible sight, that he saw this figure who was like a Shudra, a very low class being, but he was dressed as a king, and he was beating a cow and an oxen, a cow and a bull, with a stick. He was making them suffer. So Maharaj Parikshit was very distressed, so he immediately went to him and he arrested him, seeking to punish him. Because Srila Prabhupada says, you know, a king cannot tolerate insults to the most important animal, and he certainly can't tolerate disrespect to the most important man, which is a brahmana, and these are related. So the cow is the most important animal because it serves the brahminical purpose, that the purpose of human life is to reach a brahminical platform, at least mode of goodness, and the cow plays its part in that by providing milk, which nourishes the finer tissues of the brain, which allow us to have spiritual wisdom. And from the milk come the butter and the ghee. The ghee is used to offer lamps, to offer yajna to the Supreme Lord. So this is cow protection then is most important. And the Brahmins are most important because they are the head of the whole society. But Kali, knowing this, he deliberately, his first step was to beat and try to destroy the cow and the bull. That's his first point. Very wise Kali. But Kali's reign, you could say it's all about mismanagement and quarrel. It's by dividing and conquering that, to try to put everything into distress. And it's, Srila Prabhupada said in his purport, so the root cause of all mismanagement and quarrel is that worthless men who exist in the lower modes of life, who have no real high ambitions in life, they're given the state positions, the high positions in society. So the world has been run for a long time now by men who are just power hungry. They don't have compassion for anybody else. It's their own thing is to get as powerful as possible and to maintain their close families and connections. It's all about corruption and greed. And so through all this greed, like I said, we get examples, you know, intensive farming. Again, this is Kali's method of causing disruption, causing us to forget that we have a connection with the Supreme Lord by killing 58 billion animals every year for our food. That's causing so much bad karma that, you know, people are just bewildered. Nobody understands really what's happening. The karmic results are so bad. The Roman Empire, it was very powerful, and it was so nasty that actually it used religion as its weapon. It used religion to take power in the world. Very, very, that's real Kali Yuga stuff. So don't worry, I'll start making this a bit lighter. I just wanted to go straight in to the point here about greed. But Bali Maharaj, he's like here, and he's kind of like hearing both sides. He's hearing about, you know, the power of the demon. Shukracharya is saying, you know, we within our family, we must maintain this great wealth and prosperity. We, you know, we owe it to ourselves. We are the demons. We're powerful. We're sometimes we beat the demigods. We're stronger than them. And we'll always do that. It's the eternal war that goes on, the eternal war between the demons and the demigods within the material creation. This is going on eternally. And then there's Vamanadeva, the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's speaking about things that are touching Bali Maharaj's heart slowly. Vamanadeva's saying, you can offer me anything you like, anything in all the worlds, but still, how can I ever be satisfied? I'll only want more. I'll only want more. And of course, this is very powerful. Whereas Shukracharya is saying, be very careful about giving charity, especially to this Supreme Personality. You'll be giving everything away. You'll end up in hell if you go along with this contract, with this dwarf. So Bali Maharaj is hearing both sides. And in a way, that's what we're all hearing from both sides. And people in general, we have to make that decision. And we have to look into our hearts and intuitively feel, which way do I want to go? Do I want to have like power in this age and influence? Or do I want to kind of surrender to this feeling in my heart that's very potent and inspiring? I feel there's something more. Whenever I show like compassion or friendship or do something in the mode of goodness, then I feel good. What's that all about? So this is people are asking themselves these questions. So I was just thinking also about, you know, greed itself, it sort of doesn't really have much of a shelf life really, because it must ultimately change, because it just leads to misery, aloneness, frustration, disappointment. Ultimately, so many people, you find that something else arises in the heart. Because we are all eternal spirit souls, whether we know it or not, that soul is there, that's who we actually are. All the other, everything that happens under the influence of the mayic energies, these are just like temporary situations. So there's a higher purpose of higher vibration of greed is actually like aspiration, the feeling that, yeah, I want to achieve something, I want to get something, but it's a bit more on the spiritual platform. And this aspiration continues higher and higher. And there's many examples in the world of people who were very corrupt or powerful, but then they saw the error of their ways, and then they start to do something more for the general society. They see the error of the ways, and this is like aspiration. But aspiration continues right up to a very high level amongst the devotees. For example, when Ramananda Roy is speaking with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked him to speak about something to inspire him, and Ramananda Roy goes through what's the highest thing in life, and at one point he says, pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness cannot be had even by pious activity in hundreds and thousands of lives. It can be attained only by paying one price, and that's intense greed to obtain it. If it's available somewhere, one must purchase it without delay. This is lolium, intense greed. We must just, whenever we see it, we must just grab it. So I know that in my own life, you know, having been some exposure to Srila Prabhupada's books when I was very young, but I didn't really know what to make of it, although it was very inspiring. But it was only later, already like 40-something, having experienced many things in life, when suddenly the Bhagavad Gita, as it is, was there again. And I thought, this is it. Now I'm old, wise enough to kind of really understand this. And then I just felt this. I've just got to really grab this right now, you know. Grab it, this is it, it's the truth after all this messing around and suffering and happiness and more suffering. This is the truth, is like grab it with all you've got. So this is what we must do as devotees. So often as we're chanting, we probably experience, you know, great moments of like inspiration, and that, you know, that it's like you're holding on, you've got to hold on there, because that's our link with Krishna, that's our lifeline. Everything else is just a waste of time. And Srila Prabhupada says that so a devotee should want to serve Krishna so bad that he cries for it. We should be like crying for that mercy. Once, it doesn't mean as soon as it turns up that we can just get complacent and just Hare Krishna, and go to classes and read the books. We must keep on aspiring. And people out there know that as well. They know if successful business people, they know they can't get complacent. They have to like keep on driving. So that's us as devotees. We're all kind of somewhere between Shraddha and Prema. We're doing what we can. But what about all these other people out there? So many people, they're actually like scared to find out they actually might not be happy. The whole world is trying to tell them that they're actually, you're happy, you've got all this, everything's fine. But actually, maybe I'm not happy, you know. And some people, what is karma, what is destiny? So when we're out like book distribution, it's so interesting to talk to people and talk, have you heard about karma? Have you heard about destiny? What do you think? Free will. And some people, they've thought about it. Many have not. But it's an opener. There's one poet, I don't know, William Blake from, I don't know, 100 or so years ago. He made this amazing poem that I always really liked very much. And just a little part of it. Yes, but here comes the Supreme Lord. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Bhagavan Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Shri Shri Gornitai Shri Vrinda Devi Shri Prabhupada. Yeah, this poet William Blake, he said like, every night and every morn some to misery are born. Every morn and every night some are born to sweet delight. Some are born to sweet delight, some are born to endless night. And how can people understand this if we don't understand about that we're spirit souls, that we're connected with Krishna, the Supreme Personality? How can we understand what's going on? So many people through the ages have touched on it, but they're not quite sure. So just one other thing about this, about destiny. One, the devotees asked Srila Prabhupada, so what about destiny? Can I change it? Can I change how long I'm going to live? Can I change my destiny? And Srila Prabhupada said, no, you can't. You can't change your destiny, but Krishna can. If Krishna wants to change things, then he can change them. And Srila Prabhupada gave the example of taking a flight on an aeroplane. So you could decide, I want to fly from here to Delhi, for example. And that's just like a lifetime. When we emerge from the womb and then we're in this lifetime, we can't get out of it. So assuming, the analogy is, if the plane, assuming the plane doesn't crash or it doesn't get hijacked by someone, then the plane is going to start in London, you get on the plane and then you get off in Delhi. There's nothing you can do in between. You can't get off anywhere else. So that's like, this is the analogy. But while you're on the plane, you can get up and walk around, you can go and talk to other people, have a drink, have something to eat, you know. Feel good, feel bad, listen to music, fall in love with someone, anything could happen. You could get really drunk and obstreperous and cause a big fight. It's all possible. So this is Srila Prabhupada's analogy of our destiny. It's like, it's there and it's set out, but there's room for maneuver. We have like free will, we can change things. And certainly if we attach to Krishna, then he can change things his way according to his desire. So for most people, the problem is that there's a lack of education in the world, and in one sense, I think there's one thing is that it seems like within ISKCON, with the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu especially, we seem to have the highest philosophy in the world, on the planet, probably in the whole universe, in the whole of creation. But most people don't know about it, and it seems like there's a in that way, there's a bit of a pressure on us that we should be the ones who are educating everybody. So how's that going to happen? And so it seems like it's a bit mixed at the moment. But then there's one interesting thing about the Golden Age. It's this 10,000 year period. So now 500 plus years have already passed. But one interesting thing is, like, astrologically, they say that when ages change from one to another, there are these like 500 year overlaps. So one could also look at it that way and say that 500 years plus up to this point have been this overlapping time from Kali Yuga to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Golden Age. So it's just really starting to kick in. We've been through the difficult times of the early days of ISKCON, and now it's moving into a new era. But now it's so important we can see that we become the educators of everybody. At least we can try and get people to listen to what we've got to say, and hopefully they will. So we have to find new and inventive ways of doing that. I mean, basically, there's so much we can learn from a very basic point, like just understanding the difference between Ishvara Jiva and Prakriti, between the Supreme Lord, between the living entities, between the material nature. What is that relationship? So we know that Krishna expanded himself in three Vishnu forms. So all the material universes were set up, and the Paramatma, Super Soul, is diffused within each universe. And so, in this way, the Supreme Lord, he's Hetu, the Sanskrit word Hetu, which means cause. But on the other hand, he's not the cause, because he's separate from all of this. He's Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. He's the cause of all causes, but he's the prime evil cause, so he's separate from it. He's Ahetu. And Jiva Goswami says that this Ahetu means that Krishna is in his own world, Krishna Loka, with all his associates, with all his devotees, and they're enjoying the supreme ananda, the supreme bliss, and it's ever increasing. They're enjoying their pastimes. And the world, the universe, the material universes are being run by his expansion, who is Maya. So Maya's taking care of all the material universes. So what about the Jiva? So we're the Jiva, and we're within all this Mayic energy. So in Bhagavad Gita, again, there's the two verses in chapter 7, 4 and 5. Bhumir apo nalo vayu kam manor buddhi evacha ahankara itiyam me bina prakriti ashtada. So earth, water, fire, air, ether, fire, earth, fire, water, air, ether, mind, intelligence and false ego. These eight are the Supreme Lord's material expansions, and so the first five, the earth, fire, water, air, ether, these are the gigantic creations, and within these the sense objects are also included. So within ether there's sound, so the sound within ether, and there's sound, was it sound and touch within air, the sound, touch, and form within fire, the sound, touch, form, and taste within water, the sound, touch, form, taste, and smell within earth. So earth contains all. So actually, even from this verse, that actually we realize, actually, you know, we're very, very small. It's all there already. We think it's us, but it's not us. It's there already. Then the next verse is, Apareyam itastvanyam prakritim vidi me param Jiva Bhuta Mahabaho Yayidam Daryate Jagat. So Krishna says, besides this inferior nature, Almighty Armed Arjun, there's a superior energy of mine, and that is the living entities who are struggling within the material energy and sustaining the universe. So actually we're just energy. We are parts and parcels of Krishna, we're spiritual energy, that's it. All the rest is there already. And it's just the fact that because we're predominantly spiritual nature, because of the inferior energy of Maya, which is so powerful, we start to feel that that's us, and we get lost in that. That's the illusion, and we get lost in it. So we should be very grateful that we, from Srila Prabhupada and all the Acharyas, have brought us this wisdom by which we can get out, which we can transcend this material energy. And it's very interesting, just, you know, it can be so educational to people if only they would listen to this philosophy, that actually this desire to engage in sense gratification, that actually the material creation is continuing to exist to aid this situation. It doesn't have to exist, but it is existing because of this. And again, Srila Prabhupada gives the example of like a government prison. So the government makes a prison because there's people who will break the law, so there must be a place where they can go, right? But it's not a place that anybody should go. It's who wants to be in a prison? But in this sense, but prisoners are then hetu himself. Prisoners are the cause of the prison. So the cause of the construction of the prison is for the prisoners. It doesn't have to be there. In the same way, the Lord manifests the material world to facilitate the desire for sense gratification. And the need, well, the desire to forget about Krishna and just enjoy our own senses. So we are the cause of that, and Krishna's providing that. So if that need stops, then there would be no need for the whole material creation. It's very interesting. Meanwhile, Krishna is in his own abode, surrounded by the highest of wealth, which we cannot even conceive of. With all his associates. Which is the best place for all of us to be as spirit souls. We should all be there. But we tend to reject this because we prefer to seek our own misfortune in the shadow kingdom of the material world, endlessly trying to get power to enjoy our senses. Very dangerous situation, because Maya is Chaya. You can put that on a t-shirt, see what people think about that. Maya is Chaya. Because she's the shadow of the Lord's potency. She's doing the job for Krishna. The Shristi Stiti Pralaya. Oh, is it Shristi Stiti Pralaya? Oh, I've forgotten it. From Brahma Samhita. She is the shadow potency. Who's worshipped in India certainly as Durga. So Durga, she's the creating, preserving, destroying agency of the mundane world. Was it Shristi Stiti Pralaya Sadhana Shaktireka Chaya Vayasya Bhuvanani Bibharti Durga Ichanarupa Masiyasya Vachachachasya Govindam Adipurisham Tamaham Bhajami? Nearly made it. So, yeah, the external potency, Maya, she is the shadow nature. And we're all illusioned by that. So it's actually Maya and Jiva are the hetu, the cause of the material creation. But Krishna is the supreme cause, but he's only working as the overseer and permitter. That's his role. He's not really all that interested in what's going on here. Krishna's real desire is Sarva Dharmam Parityaja, Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. He wants us all to give up the association of Maya and return to the spiritual abode, to Krishna. That is our true nature. So as far as real charity goes, the Shastric idea of proper giving of charity, as Shukracharya has said, and Srila Prabhupada has sustained, this is very important for the world to at least remain in some kind of mode of goodness. But actually the ultimate charity is just to give everything to Krishna. Offer everything to Krishna, because that's where it's come from. It all belongs to him. It doesn't belong to us. None of it. We're all just thieves, complete thieves. We're just stealing. So when we have this conception, this overview, then we can more clearly understand our position in life. We can feel a sense of real identity when we go deeper and deeper into this conception. So this is what the world needs. So in Bhagavad Gita, again, it says, Yat karoshi, yat ashnasi, yaj juhoshi dadasi yat, yat tapasyasi konteya, tat karushva madarpanam. So everything we do, everything we eat, everything we perform or give away, whatever austerities we perform, we should do that as an offering to Krishna. And in this way, our lives can become sublime, and we know we can get out of the cycle of samsara. No need to take future lives trying desperately to enjoy our senses. So I take from the meaning of this purport, this is really what has been said here. And Srila Prabhupada points out, you know, from the devotee side, that Srila Rupa Goswami gave this example of how a devotee can really help that process by sustaining the Brahmins, by sustaining the Vaishnavas and all the projects. So this is going on, and many people are supporting ISKCON. Many of the householders are supporting all the projects. What about the huge project in Mayapur, everything? We must continue to do that, because this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's great movement, and we must be a part of that. And as Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, it's that all dharma, artha and kama are taken care of by Krishna consciousness. We don't need to aspire over much for any of that. It all comes automatically. All wealth that comes from proper pursuit of life purpose, and all sensory happiness comes from chanting of Hare Krishna and absorbing deeper and deeper into the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So I won't say any more. I don't know if somebody has something they'd like to add, or maybe a question, I can try and answer it.